This is Dialogue Conspiracy for another Saturday afternoon. This one being the 2nd of September. And Mae Russell is in the studio with us again. Dialogue Conspiracy is, and you check off which one it is, Mae.
Dialogue Conspiracy is a discussion of the news that takes place each week. And I try to relate it to my research on the past political assassinations. And I believe very strongly that the murder of Robert Kennedy and President John Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and maybe 100 other public officials down the line that I know of, but I use the most prominent murders to research in depth, have an effect upon the news every day because they were done for political purposes. And certain people gain by those murders, certain people lose and move in positions of power and affect the news, foreign policy, domestic policy. And I study the ballistic evidence, the autopsy evidence, the criminal evidence of these political assassinations, and in studying them, I realized that the alleged murderers were not the murderers. And then you begin to study how is the news controlled, the media controlled, if Lee Harvey Oswald didn't kill John Kennedy, or Sirhan Sirhan did not kill Robert Kennedy, or James Ray did not kill Martin Luther King. Who manipulates the news media to make you believe that these men are doing these particular murders? And Dialogue Conspiracy is a weekly show based upon 9 years' research on men in the news who achieve their position or prominence in relationship to the past political assassinations.
Okay, let's dig right into the news this week.
Well, the funniest...
There's a lot to a lot to discuss.
We always bring more than we have time to discuss.
Always.
I have a pile of material to bring in each week that's just from this week's news.
Well, before we get into specifics, let's discuss the range of what you're going to talk about. The Watergate, of course.
We're going to talk about the Watergate
Hotel. Some new information concerning the John Kennedy assassination.
A lot of people may wonder why we're talking about the Watergate every week. We've been doing this since June, Phil. In depth, the Watergate Hotel, the breaking in at the Democratic headquarters. Why is that related to political assassinations, you may be wondering. The team that was arrested at the Watergate Hotel, the men that were arrested, were all members of the CIA, and they all worked with the CIA at the time of the Bay of Pigs. And Mr. Barker, Bernard Barker, who was arrested in Washington Hotel, bugging the Democratic headquarters, was the conduit of funds for the Bay of Pigs. And his contact man, Howard Hunt, who we'll talk about right now, who in the news on Friday was at the Watergate Hotel, but wasn't arrested at the time. He got away, and he just admitted Friday that he was at the Watergate Hotel at the time they were arrested, was the planner of the Bay of Pigs invasion. The other men were involved with the Bay of Pigs, Gonzalez, Martinez, and Frank Sturgis. Sturgis was apprehended by the FBI at the time President John Kennedy was killed, and he is closely connected to a group in Florida, the Alpha 66, and the no-name key group, the anti-Castro Cubans, that were suggested by Jim Garrison as being part of the Kennedy conspiracy. And the Watergate was important to me because I've been predicting for a long time that Richard Nixon would be killed in the next interim, and that Spiro Agnew would be president of the United States, and that the same team that would kill John Kennedy would kill Richard Nixon. It has nothing to do with political affiliation as such. Democrats and Republicans are killed if they stand in the way of a particular power organization. Just like in China, Lin Pao was murdered, and Mao Zedong is still on top. The men worked hand in hand all those years through the revolution and worked up to the top. And we're like blood brothers, but when one is in the way of the other one, they can kill each other. It doesn't take an anti-communist to kill Lin Pao. A communist could kill him.
Okay.
This is a concept that people, we could talk about 1 minute, because people don't understand this concept. When I say that the same people that killed John Kennedy tried to eliminate George Wallace.
It's confusing. It's hard to make that comparison or tie-in in your mind, isn't it?
Well, there was an article this week in this week's paper by Jack Anderson on a deal that was made to Governor Wallace and by the Nixon administration, the Justice Department, that one of his top aides was arrested and was going to be prosecuted, an ex-commandant of the Alabama Air National Guard. And they are dropping this indictment not to embarrass Wallace. And this is the way the article read. It says, White House aides discussing the political outlook said they had assurances that Wallace would not run as an independent, and this was a significant advantage for the president. For in 1968, Wallace's third-party candidacy prevented Nixon from carrying Southern straights that would have gone, that would have chosen him over Hubert Humphrey. When I talked about the shooting of Wallace, you see how Nixon gained by having Wallace out of the election. People couldn't understand how that worked, but I have about 20 or 30 articles from various political persons and now analyzing the news on how the elimination of Wallace from the campaign helps Richard Nixon. So we're talking about conspiracies, attempt to murder, actual assassinations. It has to do with getting votes. So the men that lined up, will go back into the Watergate later. We're going to talk today about the doctor, PhD, who got into the National Archives to see some material on John Kennedy's his x-rays, and he wanted to see some of the brain matter that's preserved there.
Now, why is that so unusual that a doctor got into the National Archives to see some of the material connected with the assassination?
Well, the doctor that got in there, Dr. Wecht, his name is, trying 9 years to get, 8 years to try and get in the National Archives.
You mean it's hard to get into the National Archives?
You have to have permission from Burke Marshall, who's a professor of law at Yale University, assigned by the Kennedy family. See, these are the things that really make me very angry, is that one family can determine who has access to scientific data that would tell us if Oswald didn't do the killing alone, if there was more than one gunman. That is equal to a conspiracy, and the Kennedy family gives the approval of who gets to determine whether or not there's a conspiracy. Even the Warren Commission couldn't use this material.
Was the Kennedy family given this right or privilege by law or something?
The Kennedy family was given this information, the undeveloped x-rays of John Kennedy's body at the time of autopsy, and all the pertinent matter relating to John Kennedy was given to the Kennedy family, to Robert Kennedy, who was the Attorney General, the night that John Kennedy was killed. But he didn't turn it over to any law enforcement agencies. You see, I'm sure that Jackie Kennedy, sitting around the hospital corridor and returning back to Washington, felt that there was some real hanky-panky going on in Dallas when her husband was killed. Even in the state of shock she was in, she wouldn't change her clothes because she said, I want them to see what they did. And the only they was Lyndon Johnson, who flew back on the plane with her. She wouldn't change her clothes, and she sat on the plane in these bloody clothes. And when she got to Washington, Robert Kennedy met her, and the body was taken to Bethesda Hospital. And the undeveloped x-rays...
It's hard for you to say. The only they was Lyndon Johnson, who flew back on the plane.
Well, the news media...
it's hard to accept that at face value.
Well, maybe I'm going over it too fast. When she said, I want them to see what they did, they wanted her to change her outfit. She refused, and there have been so far 109 books on the Kennedy assassination, and many of these books have mentioned the fact of who was on the airplane or why Jacqueline Kennedy insisted on walking around with those clothes, the opinion of several authors analyzing who was on the airplane.
Okay,
and who was
but
with her.
I guess it's safe to say that Jackie Kennedy may have suspected that there was some type of hanky-panky involved in the death of her husband. It wasn't what you'd call an everyday occurrence.
No.
So you can make that assumption, I suppose, pretty fairly, safely.
Let's make the assumption, let's say it this way, follow it up, maybe on the plane she wasn't thinking it out, like Lyndon Johnson's involved, so I want him to suffer. It wasn't that kind of a thing. But she never did see that man again and never went to Washington except about two times to go to the grave of her husband. While Lyndon Johnson was in Washington, she had nothing to do the 5 years that followed with the Johnson family or that administration in any sense of the word.
So, the Kennedy family has the right to determine who sees until a certain year this material...
For 75 years.
Which is supposed to be the normal lifetime of anybody who was alive at the time of the assassination.
Well, there was a five-year break-off that would come in the fall of 71 that you could get access by permission, but nobody could have access till then. I felt, when I heard where the material was, and this came out in 1964, 65, the question came out, where is all this material? Because a book had come out about the assassination called Inquest. Then Robert Kennedy turned it over to the archives with the same condition, and I felt at that time that he was not going to allow it to be exposed, but it was in exchange for the nomination that Lyndon Johnson wouldn't run. And when Lyndon Johnson said he wouldn't run in 68, I had felt for 2 years that a deal had been made. Now, there's no way to ever verify that, but I could predict it fairly well that the only reason those films were undeveloped would be in exchange for the nomination.
Okay, so now let's get back to this article and try and tie it together. What we've established so far for listeners is that that there is material in the National Archives which is hard to get to, which only selected people are allowed to see, and there are some conclusions and some questions being raised by what is said about that material in there. So why don't you...
Well, the San Jose Mercury last Sunday had an article, Warren Report Invalid, New Door Opens in the JFK Slaying. And the New York Times had an article, Mystery Cloaks the Fate of the Brain of John Kennedy. Now, this...
What do they mean, the brain of John Kennedy?
Well, this is... Parts of the brain matter were withheld from Dr. Wecht. Dr. Cyril Wecht is a professor. He's the director of the Pittsburgh Institute of Legal Medicine and the Institute of Forensic Sciences at Duquesne University. And he's a research professor of law at Duquesne, and he's a pathology instructor. He's a lawyer and a doctor, pathology instructor at the University of Pittsburgh of Medicine. And he has a doctor's degree in medicine and also in law. And he...
It's an unusual combination.
Yes, and it's a very good combination. And he is wants, what he wants is a group of people to study the microscopic slides of the Kennedy brain that were supposed to have been held, you know, in formaldehyde. And he wants radiologists, neurosurgeons, criminalists, firearms experts to go into the documents that he saw. He went into the National Archives last week. And his conclusion was that bullet 399, he saw the famous bullet, it's commission exhibit 399, which is the single bullet that was supposed to go through President Kennedy and John Connally. And if that single bullet was physically impossible to penetrate both bodies and come out whole, then there were more than one gunman, which would equal a conspiracy. Then Oswald couldn't have done it alone. It was a question of the time factor. They have reconstructed the movies of the assassination, and a certain amount of time went off from the first shot that hit John Kennedy, because you see him in the car and his hand goes to his throat, to the time where his brain was blown off. And in that time period, only a given amount of bullets could have been shot from Lee Harvey Oswald's weapon.
To clarify, is Dr. Wecht saying that bullet 399 couldn't have done it, or is he saying that he wants more people to examine it to determine whether it really could have gone through both persons?
He says it's absolutely impossible that it could have done it. He said that it was, this is a bullet that was found on a stretcher, and he said it was impossible for this particular bullet. It's sitting there whole, and it was supposed to go through bone, and part of it was in John Connally's body. I brought in two books on that subject. One is called 6 Seconds in Dallas by Josiah Thompson. And there's many sections in this book about the famous bullet 399 that Mr. Wecht was talking about this last week that he saw. And how it was, this book came out in 1966. And there's another book called Two Flight Paths, Evidence of Conspiracy by Robert Cutler. Cutler was out here last year from Massachusetts. He was a guest on the show. And this whole book is on bullet 399, on the impossibility of this one bullet doing what it was supposed to do. So this last week, Dr. Wecht finally got into the National Archives, and when he got in there, he saw bullet 399, which he said was impossible to do all the damage. But then the other things that he asked to see are hidden from him, and they've been locked up. And he can't find them, and he's asked for somebody to give him information. The New York Times said that parts of the Kennedy brain that would show the entry or exit of the bullet by the way it's burnt, you see, would determine if he was really killed by an entry bullet. But they have withheld this from him, and he wants to see these items. They're locked up. They locked up some more stuff.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. The fact that he got into the National Archives is a feat in itself. And now for him to be critical of some of the conclusions of the Warren Commission seems to... indicate that maybe he's going to have trouble getting back in.
Well, the people who let him in, Burke Marshall and the Kennedy family, said Dr. Wecht now's on the offensive, probing into the evidence of the archives, that now that he's seen something, he wants more, and he's not satisfied with what he saw.
Why did they originally let him in?
Well, because they let in two other doctors who are not even pathologists. One was a urologist, you see, and they had called the New York Times 2 weeks earlier. The New York Times was ready to say Oswald did it alone. It was a big cover story, but the Committee to Investigate Assassinations that exists in Washington has pursued this matter because they're well-known lawyers. Bernard Fensterwald's behind this and a group of team that said, now look, you can't keep letting in these men to doctor up your theory. You have to let in Dr. Weck. So they let him in, but they withheld many of the items. And the New York Times said the full extent of the items that have been withheld may never be known because the inventory is being kept secret at the behest of the Kennedy family. And they let Dr. Latimer in, but they won't let him see. Dr. Weck asked several questions. He said he wanted to know is why the wounds in the back of President Kennedy's head, stated in the Warren report, were 4 inches lower than what the pictures were that he saw, and why the Warren report's drawing showed the bullet in the back inches lower than the ones he saw in the photograph. Then he said there's also a little flap of loose scalp that is visible above the hairline on the back left side of the president's head that could be an entrance or exit wound that was never reported in the Warren Commission findings. Dr. Weck said that he would write to Mr. Marshall, that's Burke Marshall, at Yale Law School, and lay all these questions to rest by again inspecting the material plus the brain and microscopic slides of the wounds. And he wants a team of criminologists, a neurosurgeon, radiologists with him. And Mr. Marshall said, well, we let him have some materials, and why is he on the offensive? Why is he doing all this probing? Well,
what are his chances of getting back in?
Oh, I don't know. I really have been depressed this week, I think, because I realize how tightly the information is held up. You know, this story about going in the archives was on UPI, but didn't come in on your wire service of UPI, and LA Times didn't get the material, and San Francisco Chronicle didn't have anything on page 16. They had just a little article that two doctors have a discrepancy on their autopsy of John Kennedy. Well, to find out if there was a conspiracy would lead all the way up to Richard Nixon, you know, and the administration, and Lyndon Johnson, and they've covered it so well that they're not, they can say, well, we let Dr. Weck in, but then there's a news blackout. There's nothing in Life or Time or the major media, Associated Press, United Press. They kept him out or other people out, you know, pathologists for 9 years, and all these books come out, that there are whole books on the subject. They're not just quotations or a breath of a whisper. They're actual scientific data on the bullet, its shape, and how many particles were lost, and what the Warren Commission said.
So you don't think that Dr. Wecht is going to be allowed to return with
I
the
don't
people
think
that he wants?
No, I don't think he'll be able to get a team in to do it, because then that would prove that there was a conspiracy 9 years ago. And our administration, our government isn't set up. The Congress back there is just too lazy and sleepy. They don't care. It costs money to get elected, and you're beholden to both sides, and there nobody is making any ripples. It's an academic study that understanding the conspiracies can be interesting, like we talk about the evidence in these things. It's an academic study. I can't see Washington doing anything.
Are there no legislators in Congress left that question or want the archives opened?
I don't think so. I don't hear not one of them saying it. A group of people came down to see me. I've had a lot of company since the article was out in The Realist, and there were 5 people at my home this last weekend, and one of them has direct contact with the government headquarters, somebody else in San Francisco I've been in touch with, too, who has contact. And two of these people were students, journalism student at Stanford, biology student at Stanford, and then there were 3 other people with them politically active. And we went over a lot of the research and information, what I think are facts of a conspiracy, and they were a little overwhelmed by it, and they realized that this is true, something had to be done. And so they go home, you know.
A little overwhelmed has to be the understatement of the year.
Well, you know, they could dig what I was saying the minute they saw it laid out.
Okay, so they went home.
They went home, and then the families, you know, say, well, one boy particularly from Stanford was very depressed because his father wanted to send him to a psychiatrist. He thought he was mentally sick. Then he'd completely gone off his rocker. And the old man, you know, who's fairly well off, an establishment, say, Democrat, wouldn't say to a congressman in his area, you better go into this. My son says there's evidence of a conspiracy, or show me where it is. The parents don't want to know. There's nobody pressuring the congressman to do anything about this. You know, I met Julius Camacho, who's running for Congress in this area, and Bert Talcott's been at my home, and Bert's opinion is it doesn't matter who killed John Kennedy. And Camacho, I met with him just for a half hour, and he knew that I was doing work on political assassinations. But the subject never came up. Somebody told him a rumor, which wasn't true, that I had some money. And I think he just thought I was going to, you know, fork over for the campaign. The subject of politics never came up. There was nothing interesting to him about the fact that the government could be overthrown or how it relates to the political campaign or what he would do if he were in Congress. He wouldn't do anything. He's not interested.
So then the information in there just remains there.
That's right. I mean, even if you know, Dr. Weck gets there, doctor, a lawyer, spent years, and I just brought him two books to mention, as many books on this, and should show you the arrogance of the people in power. Kleinitz came out with an article this last Tuesday, and he promised that the investigation into the Watergate would be so thorough that it'd be nothing. It would, the only thing to compare to it would be the investigation of the assassination of President Kennedy. Now, that has to be a little in-joke, because I mentioned 109 books on the assassination of John Kennedy. And if we took everything that was wrong with the Warren Report, I could do an hour a week for 52 weeks. I have that as an outline of a book. Some of the problems with the Warren Commission, just take one example. When the Warren Commission told you who killed John Kennedy, they didn't use the autopsy x-rays that were taken at the time of his murder. They don't even know how many holes are in the man's body, but yet Mr. Weck found an extra flap or an extra entrance hole that shows up, and an extra mass on the brain that other people had seen but didn't do anything with this information. See, and they didn't know whether it was a bullet or a tumor. So it would be interesting to know if John Kennedy had one more bullet in his head or a tumor. That was in the article this week, New York Times, but nobody seems to think that matters, that there'd be a second gunman out on the street, or that the people who had planned such a thing are still around. So Kleinitz promised, in going into the Watergate investigation, that it would be the most extensive, thorough, and comprehensive investigation since the assassination of President Kennedy.
That couldn't be an in-joke, I suppose.
Oh, it has to be an in-joke. It can't be anything but, because there's been so much controversy. The same week that he said it, the headlines in the Mercury were saying the Warren Report is invalid. It has to be an in-joke, because Klein is the head of the Justice Department.
Now, there was another statement made by a man by the name of Milhouse, Richard Milhouse Nixon. He met reporters in San Clemente and answered questions from the press, and he had the question put to him about the Watergate, and Mr. Nixon said that, well, he made a blanket statement. He said no one in his present administration was in any way connected with the Watergate Hotel incident. But the news reports did not indicate whether anybody in his administration at the time of the incident,
that's right,
were involved. But no one has questioned that, and the reporters there didn't bother to ask whether anybody at the time of the incident were employed there. There's a reason for that, too.
Well, you know, as each day goes on, I have more respect for Richard Nixon. I think the man is a genius, because the way he can work his way in and out all these years, and nobody can catch him. They don't think of these things. Of course, there is the problem, and I think I mentioned it to you, that if a reporter would say, was anyone under your employ at the time of the Watergate arrest, he would lose his White House connections and he wouldn't be there. The very reason he's there is that he doesn't ask those kind of questions.
That's to a major extent true.
Yeah.
That to be a White House correspondent involves a certain amount of, contacts. You have to have contacts in the White House. There are people in the White House who officially aren't supposed to talk, but unofficially, if you know them well enough, they'll talk to you. They'll give you a break on a story. They'll give you an exclusive interview. They'll tip you off to a small bit of information, all of which, if you turn it over to your editor, puts you in the good graces of your boss.
That's right.
And as long as you
can't
stay in
the
good
the
graces
president.
Of the White House, then you'll stay in the good graces of your boss. That's
you can't
the way
embarrass
it works.
The president. You wouldn't be there. You wouldn't be down there in the first place. The questions are legal questions, and he can answer them safely. He's covered. You know,
now, the first time the reporter asks an embarrassing question, one that violates the unspoken ground rules of the White House, he finds that his White House sources dry up.
Yeah.
And they disappear.
Well, you know.
And you stop getting the stories that your editor likes to see.
Let's see what happens with a story this next week. It'll be revealing on how far a person can go, because it has to do with the news that came in yesterday, and it has to do with Helen Thomas of the White House. Richard Sprague, who writes for Computer and Automation, and he was also a guest on our show last year, is an engineer in the electronic computer field. And he helped design the original computers for Packard up in Palo Alto, and he works for Litton at the right now. And Sprague was in Washington at the Watergate Hotel and went to the room that was bugged, and he asked questions and also went across the street to Howard Johnson Motel, where allegedly they were receiving messages from the bugging apparatus that was set up at the Democratic headquarters. And he called me and said, I have news for you. The article that you did in The Realist that suggested that the walkie-talkies could and electronic devices were received at the Watergate Hotel and not at the Howard Johnson are going to prove electronically more accurate than saying that the messages went across the street, because he examined the two buildings. So then he called Helen Thomas from the UPI, and that's the reporter that Martha Mitchell called when she said she was a political prisoner. And he wanted to ask her to check out my story, the allegations that the electronic setup was in the Watergate Hotel in another room and not across the street. And he asked her, what else did Martha Mitchell say to you? Can you remember anything else? Because she says, I saw dirty tricks, or I know of dirty tricks. What was she saying? Well, Helen Thomas said the one thing she remembered Martha talking about was James McCord. Martha Mitchell was out in California, but she was ranting and raving about James McCord. And Helen Thomas says that she didn't place much on that. McCord had been arrested, but she didn't see the significance. So she asked for the copy of The Realist, and I airmailed her one the same day. That was this last week, and sent it right off to Washington. And Dick Sprague sent her his article, a resume of the Watergate thing as he saw it, that was written in Computer and Automation this last month. Well, yesterday's news... your news releases came over, and you had an interview of John Mitchell, and also this one, that two men were also ex-White House aides, were actually in the offices of the hotel.
Okay, we'll pick up there after we take a break, and we'll come back with part two of Dialogue Conspiracy with the latest in the Watergate incident. You're listening to 24-hour KLRB FM in Carmel.